Inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast, I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak, but it is not just the two of us here on this edition of the podcast, because today we are starting our guest mock draft series. Truly one of my favorite things that Ben and I get to do every single year, where what we're doing is having a beat reporter who covers one of the teams that's picking in the first round. We have them on to give us an overview of the team, talk about the season, some of the offseason moves they've made, some draft strategy that they believe that the team is going to have, give us an insider look at all of that, and then finally have them make a pick as we will go down the line for all 32 picks in the first round. And to get us started, the best and only way we know how, from Locked On Bengals, our friend Joe Goodberry. Joe, thank you so much for batting leadoff here for the guest mock draft, my man.
Thanks for having me. I just listened to the episode from last year when you guys had me on to see what I said and see what came true. I just thought about it when you sent me that message. I'm like, you know, let me go back and see how that went. And it was on April 8th. So you guys are right on time, being 11 days early, now that we're going from pick 11 to pick 1. Just so you know, you're very on schedule.
Well, you know.
How'd you do last year, man? Did you get it right?
Well, I mentioned Jermaine Pratt, I mentioned Rennell Wren, and I did say I like the third tier of tight end class. I just didn't know that meant Drew Sample in round two.
Yeah, I was about to say, third tier feels a little bit later than Drew Sample in round two, but we're glad to have you back on, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I guess that's a great segue and a great way to start. You know, the Bengals go into the season in 2019. Zach Taylor's the head coach. It's obviously a very big jump for him, going from being the quarterback's coach with the Los Angeles Rams the year before. I'd just love to kind of get your take again of what your mindset was like when the Bengals kind of announced that, hey, Zach Taylor's going to be the guy, he is going to be the player or the person making that jump to such a high decision maker spot, and then what you thought of him in his first year in 2019. How do you think he did?
Well, first I wanted to go offensive. I wanted to go young, and mostly from the change from Marvin Lewis. I like the idea of trying to modernize the offensive side of the ball and have a quarterback that they would eventually draft, because I think the writing was on the wall with Dalton even going into last year, that once they do get to drafting a quarterback, I'd like them to be surrounded by as many quarterbacks coaches as possible. And that includes Brian Callahan, and it was Alex Van Pelt at the time with Zach Taylor. And I'm like, all right, this is a good recipe to bring a coach in, or a new quarterback in. So I was excited about that. I also knew that the Bengals being the Bengals and their reputation, they wouldn't be able to go out and probably get the top guys. They're going to have to try and find a diamond in the rough or hit on a lottery ticket. So I think that's what they were doing. If they're looking at Zach Taylor and like, you know what, he really blew us away at the interview, but he's probably 2 years away from actually being deserving of this job, we kind of have to jump on him now if we expect to get a guy like that. So I think that was their thought process in saying, well, we can do this for 2 years, and we can let it grow, and we can give him the pieces and surround him with what he needs, and we'll reevaluate. I mean, they gave Marvin Lewis 16 years. You can give Zach Taylor 2 to 3 years to figure out if he's the right guy. So after 1 year, you go 2-14, you end up with the first pick. There's a lot of looking back and wondering what happened and what went wrong, and I think they've even done a lot of this. They've talked about it, and I kind of step back and go, man, I kind of joked about them tanking last year just by some of the free agent signings that they made, and they cut all those guys this year. It was like, were those like stopgap moves in order just to, you know, to get you through that season? And now they end up number one. It may have worked if that's the case, or maybe I'm just giving them too much credit and really they got a bad team and a bad staff, but and that's always the possibility. But I do look at it now, and after free agency, I say they're not a bad roster. They lost 8 games within one score. You don't go 0-8 in one score games on an average team. You should go at least 4-4. They had Ryan Finley in there for 3 games. You're not winning any of those because he was a disaster.
Yeah, so, I mean, bless.
They threw some games there in the middle of the season, and so that means I kind of have hope that they can be better, but they have to be better.
So let me ask you this then. The Bengals select Joe Burrow at number one overall. You know, spoiler, I'm sure we'll talk more about it. But, you know, with however else they fill out the rest of the roster, whatever else the rest of the draft picks look like, what will you have to see from the Burrow-led Cincinnati Bengals in the 2020 season, which we're hoping happens, to say, you know what, I have enough faith in this coaching staff and in this front office to give them now, you know, the at least the benefit of the doubt for another couple of seasons? What is the benchmark? Is it we have to at least, like, win a few games? We got to beat a division rival? We got to just, like, look alive by the end of the season? What are you looking for?
Well, and that's going back to last year. The first eight games, they were dreadful. They didn't look alive. They weren't in a lot of games. Maybe week one against the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle, they went toe-to-toe with them and lost. And we were like, right, oh, man, yeah. maybe they'll be a decent team. And then they were horrible for the next 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then they had to fly to London, and then they had their bye week right after. So they're flying out there early, and all the stories are they got together and said, we need to completely overhaul the run game. We need to completely overhaul what we're doing on defense. This is not working. Some players going to coaches and saying, we need better checks. We need to know what we're supposed to do on this level, and this level on the defense, because we are all discombobulated right now. We need more concise calls and what we're supposed to do if they roll, or if they put this guy in motion, or if they come out and do this. And they figured it out during that like 10-day span and came out, and they only won two games in that second half of the year. But remember, three of them were with Ryan Finley, and they were close and competitive in a lot of them. Like that Miami Dolphins game. Yeah, that's not a great team to stack up against. It's the number one pick versus number five. But that week 16 game, they're down 16 points with a minute left, and they tie it up and send it to overtime. Right. Like, yeah. They were still playing and playing hard. So visually, we looked at it and said, you know what? They did make progress in the second half of the year. So, okay. So at the very least, I'm off his back just a little bit there. So year two, what do I want to see? The changes they made from the second half, and you could see it visibly in the run game and the different designs that they brought in. They're like, all right, scrap this wide zone stuff with Todd Gurley. It ain't working with Joe Mixon and these O-line, right, and this O-line that we have right now. And they went to more of a man gap scheme and doing more pitches and pulling guys to the outside, and it worked. And Mixon was great in the second half. He was breaking tackles. He was making guys miss. I need to see more of an evolution on the offensive side. If Zach Taylor is an offensive coach, you got to get the passing game going now. And I know Andy Dalton was bad, but that draws some concern for me. If you have Andy Dalton and he was like the baseline guy, if you've got better than Andy Dalton, you feel good, right? If you got worse than Andy Dalton, you probably need a quarterback. But right. Last year, they got the worst version of Andy Dalton. And that concerns me looking at the coaching staff. Did they, because there's some coaches that are amplifiers, right? They'll make the quarterback look good. There's some that don't. And if you don't, your quarterback looks worse, you're going to lose a lot of games. And so that's a concern for me starting off right away is, can they make Joe Burrow look good? Can they adapt some of that LSU scheme and offense? Brian Callahan seems to think he can, and he's been talking about it and already like taking parts of that playbook because he said they've watched so much tape of that LSU offense and talked to Burrow, and I think they're going to absorb a lot of it. And if they can and fit him in there, then I'm going to be happy because you'll be able to see it right away. Are they going empty sets? A lot of RPOs, five-man protections. Are they giving them different levels in the field and more options? Like, I feel like they're cutting the field in half for Andy Dalton for most of his career. Are you going to open it up completely for Joe Burrow?
Yeah, so
and if you can and you do that, I was just going to say, if you can see it on tape, then I'm like, okay, they're making adjustments. They're going to the next step. Now, does that mean six wins? Does it mean five? Does it mean eight? I don't know, but for me, I'm a tape guy. I want to see it on tape more than, I guess, process over results there, right?
Right, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I wanted to ask you this, too. Going 2-14, obviously, you hinted on it in your first answer. It's you're coming up short in a lot of different areas, right? It's not just kind of like one area that it's really all coming to fault with. But when you look at this team, only two-win team, you know that there's holes in places, but who are some of the core guys? Like, who are the guys that this team for the next, let's say, phase of Bengals football that they're going to build this around, whether it's on offense, defense? Who are a couple of names where it's like, hey, these are the centerpiece kind of players that the rest of the draft or even free agent additions, they're going to be built around what these guys do well. This is the strength of this team.
Yeah, if you would have asked me 2 years ago, I would have included A.J. Green and Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap. But now once you're on the other side of 30, you're not the foundation piece for the next window, right? You can be a complimentary piece. We are happy to have him on the roster. But who are the guys to build around? And on offense, you're hoping Jonah Williams, missing all of his rookie season, comes back and is Jonah Williams. And maybe he's, you know, Joe Staley or David Bakhtiari at left tackle, who was a top 10 guy, but not an elite left tackle. I think that was the hope then. I hope that's what ends up being for him. And if that's a big boost for this offense, if it is. Tyler Boyd is one of the best slot receivers in the league. I think he gets overlooked a lot of times, but even without A.J. Green all year last year, he had another good season. And I think it shows you that he can be that guy you go to often and early. Other than that, I think Joe Mixon, even though he's a running back and going into the last year of his deal. I think they're going to extend him. So they'll have to figure out, you know, the ramifications of that. I think they're ready to absorb whatever that means, and meaning you are probably going to have a bad contract on your hands or not getting the maximum value at that position. But that's okay because they like him and he's young and he's been really productive. So on offense, I think those are your three. And obviously Joe Burrow when he gets there. But on defense, I think it gets a little tougher because I think they love Carl Lawson but would like him to play more and be healthy and be more productive, because when he's out there, he's that third guy as a pass rush unit with Atkins and Dunlap. And he causes a lot of chaos, and he's a good player when he's out there. So I think they'd like to see more out of him. They'd like to see more out of William Jackson. There's been times of William Jackson where he'll go on a three-game stretch where you're like, this guy's a shutdown number one. Look at those ball skills, and look at that makeup speed. He is fantastic. And then he'll go the next two games, and you're like, is he trying, or what's going on here? And so I think they'd like to see a lot more out of him because they'd like to extend him and have that number one corner. But I think they believe more in Sam Hubbard than most people, or at least what people expected coming out. Sam Hubbard has the most sacks from that draft class, which is weird to say out of that. It was a strong defensive line class. They still like him, and they use him in a lot more ways than I even expected at the time. And then Jesse Bates at safety has been a ball hawk, and he had a terrible first half of the year, like a lot of these guys. A lot of these guys on the roster, like if you go look up PFF grades through the first 8 weeks and the second 8 weeks of the year, everyone looks like trash in the first 8 weeks. And then, oh my God, they figured it out in the second half. And Jesse Bates was one of them. They're like, we need someone on defense to take control of this team and go make plays. And then right away, he's jumping routes. And you can see he's anticipating stuff and he's reading coverages, or he's reading route combinations and getting in the way of the quarterback, making the quarterback pull it down. You're like, okay, there's Jesse Bates from the rookie year. I think he's still on the path to be like a cornerstone player back there.
All right. So then I think the natural extension of this question, and this also I think falls back a little bit on what you said about Bill Callahan watching so much LSU tape, that they're gonna grab the LSU offense and steal some of the good bits, even if Joe Burrow doesn't end up the quarterback, which we expect him to, with the cornerstones that you have, and assuming quarterback Joe Burrow is the first pick off the board. Listen, Cincinnati still got the first pick and the second, the first pick and the third. When you look at building out the entire roster beyond just getting the quarterback, what are the biggest needs that you see? What are the ways you think Cincinnati is going to want to build after that? Are you going on offense to support Burrow by just exactly copying that LSU dynamic? Or are there other ways you think they're going to try to hodgepodge some different offensive ideas together?
I do think they're already, from a Zach Taylor background, they are a three wide receiver, 11 personnel team. So they're going to have receivers out on the field. They're going to throw to the running back. I think they can do even more of that. So I think Mixon needs to well, there's a lot of talk like, we got to replace Giovanni Bernard. The contract sucks, and you can draft a backup to replace him. I think Mixon should be replacing Gio, which means on third downs, on pass protection, on late in games when you're down by 10, it's usually Gio out there, Mixon's on the sideline sitting on the bench. You can't have that if he's a cornerstone player. So I think when you look at the landscape of where they're at, they're going to want to add a receiver. They're going to want to add to the offensive line. LSU's offensive line won the award for the best. I think it had more issues than that. I think Oregon was better. But when I look at the O-line for the Bengals, I think they need a guard. And looking at it, Michael Jordan was drafted in the fourth round of Ohio State last year. They like him. He had a rough rookie year, but he was 20 years old. And I think that should be expected sometimes for those interior players, whether it be guard or center or interior defensive line. So they like him, and I think he's going to start one spot. They send the Cowboys Xavier Suafilo, who has been mostly a backup spot starter throughout his career. I think he's penciled in as the other guard spot, but I think there's a lot of room to draft maybe a guy that can play tackle, guard, or maybe a Cesar Ruiz that can be a center or a guard. Like if Josh Jones was still there somehow and you said, okay, he's our right guard and we're going to move him out to right tackle in a year or two to replace Bobby Hart, I think that would be something they would love to do. I just don't think Josh Jones is there. So I think at 33, O-line makes a lot of sense. I think Cesar Ruiz, if they want to say, okay, you're a guard, like they did with James Daniels and Frank Ragnow in Chicago and Detroit, and then you move to center in a year or two, I think that makes sense. I also think they'd love to go on the defensive side and get a linebacker, because that's been an issue for them for a long time. Jermaine Pratt is expected to start. They liked what he did in the second half of the year. They signed Josh Bynes from the Ravens. I think those are your two linebackers. But do you want Josh Bynes in coverage? The Ravens didn't, and he's 31 years old. So right, exactly. So you still want to add to that group, because The rest of that roster is just Jordan Evans and then Brady Sheldon, who is a practice squad guy. That's it. They don't have another linebacker really on the roster to take any snaps. So they're going to have to address it, whether that be 33 or 65 or maybe fourth round, because to be honest, you do those mock simulations, third and fourth round seems to have the same type of linebacker there, whether you're getting Malik Harrison at 65 or Akeem Davis-Gaither or Willie Gay Jr. in the fourth round or third round. I think you can interchange a lot of those. Logan Wilson, I think there's a lot of guys you can grab in that range. So I think they probably wait, because I don't expect a linebacker to be there, whether it be Queen or Murray at 33. I think they will probably be gone. I do think the interesting one is Zach Bond. I think he's more of an edge guy. The Bengals played a lot of more multiple defense last year, which right. would allow you to do some flexible stuff. You put him at edge, and I think he can do some inside. Maybe he's your thumper in your 3-4 sets where you can come in and take on the fullback or you know, play the run a little bit and allow Jermaine Pratt to roam a little bit more free. I think you could do things with Zach Bond, and that would be interesting to me going forward and seeing how you can be a little more multiple with him. The sneaky one is wide receiver, though, because if you look at the 2021 roster for the Bengals under contract, it's only Tyler Boyd and Auden Tate. Well, Auden Tate had a good second year. He was a seventh-round pick, and he's not the most dynamic guy. He's still completing about 50% of his targets because he's a home runner, strikeout kind of guy. He's not going to get a lot of separation, but he's going to make some crazy catches. I still think receiver is there on the board at 33. If Denzel Mims is there, I think they're going to have a hard time passing him. I think because they saw him at the Senior Bowl, and man, he put on a show running routes that we didn't get to see him Baylor at all, because he ran like five different routes there. But he was nuanced, man. If he's there, I find it hard to believe he wouldn't be the pick.
Yeah, sometimes those Senior Bowl connections, man, they go a long way. Anytime you get a coaching staff that's in Mobile, they can always be a little bit of that X factor.
Especially this year, right?
Yeah. I definitely think this year, you know, with a lot less pro days and a lot less travel going on, man, if you got to see guys in person, that might go a long way. So, all right, Joe, moment of truth, getting this kicked off. I think that we all know who the pick is going to be for the Bengals here at number one, but go ahead and tell us who you're taking for the Bengals and then give us a little bit of reasoning why you believe this is the best pick for them.
Yeah, it's easy. It's Joe Burrow, and it's
wow,
never
shocked.
Been anybody
oh
else,
man,
right?
What crazy!
Joe,
so wait, how? Wait,
up, you're
how,
just making this pick because you have the same name.
That's right.
So we did talk about this a little bit before we hit record on the podcast, though. How long has it been Joe Burrow? Like, I think we've kind of been talking about this for a long, long time. But as someone who follows the Bengals closely, how long has this been, like, solidified? Like, yes, this is the guy. Like, don't overthink this. This has got to be it.
It seemed very clear going into the season that they were going to be looking at a quarterback. We just didn't know where they'd pick. So, you know, your options are open just going into the year of where you may fall. And I believe it was week two, Utah State versus LSU, and Duke Tobin goes down there to watch that game. And you're like, man, we don't normally get reports of Duke Tobin going anywhere. So was he going to look at Jordan Love? This is interesting. Man, Jordan Love is a mid-first-round pick. Okay, let's go. And you don't think too much of Joe Burrow at that time. And you come back a couple months later, and the Bengals are 0-8, and the Tigers, LSU, are playing Alabama. And you're like, whoa, Joe Burrow's on fire. Here's Tua. Maybe the Bengals are picking top two or three. Maybe Tua's on the table. And Tua's hurt that game. He has a good game considering, and Burrow lights it up completely, and he's having his Heisman moments, and you're starting to go, okay, where's this Joe Burrow guy supposed to go? Is he for real? And over the next month, the Bengals solidify that number one pick, clinch it, and Joe Burrow solidifies his role or his standing as the number one guy and just completely tears it up to end the year and in the playoffs and in the national championship, looking flawless, getting better as the season goes. If you guys have watched them in chronological order, if you're listening, I suggest you do it, because as crazy as his year was, he got better throughout the year. And it's just like, whoa, yeah. Oh my God. You go back and watch it from the beginning and you go, okay, maybe they were going to look at Joe Burrow and maybe they're thinking he was a mid-round pick at the time. But they got quick eyes on him and Jordan Love. And I start to go, okay, maybe since November when he beat Tua and Tua was hurt, and then maybe since December, and then definitely since January. You could hear it. You could feel it. I went to the Senior Bowl. I'm asking Duke Tobin questions. I got a few minutes with him just to talk with him. I talked to Zach Taylor, And they didn't want to talk about Joe Burrow at all. Like, they were like, hush, hush, you know, don't even mention his name. Oh, we got to go through a process, yada, yada. But I would ask questions about a player similar to Joe Burrow. What do you think about quarterbacks that, you know, have that innate ability to go off script and create plays on their own? What if a guy doesn't have a great arm, but he's really good in everything else? Deep accuracy, touch, anticipation, reading defenses, you know, quick processing. I'm asking all these things that would sound like a Joe Burrow scouting report. And the way they're answering them, whether they're catching on to what I'm asking or not,
right,
they're saying we would love a guy like that and he would be perfect, and that's what you need to have in this league, when especially like off script stuff. Duke Tobin lit up and stopped and looked at me like, yeah, like you need to have, you look at the league and you look at the teams that made it to the end, and you look at Mahomes and you look at what they do on third downs. You want to have that. You need to have it. I think you need to have it for the next generation. And I'm like, the pick's Joe Burrow. And at that point, you could tell like the whole energy changed. When talking to them, they're describing Joe Burrow as the guy they want. So I think definitely in January it was solidified. And then the reports started coming, whether it was Adam Schefter or local guys saying, like, it'll be Burrow and they won't even trade the pick, because I don't think they would. I don't think you can give enough picks to get them to move off this number one guy.
Yeah, when you need a quarterback and a guy who's coming off the kind of year that Burrow is coming off of, it's hard to look anywhere else. And I got to sit right next to Burrow during his combine podium interview. And I'll tell you, man, the charisma, the confidence, the candidness that he has, it's there all the time. And that gave me a lot of faith to, hey, this thing at LSU, this LSU bubble that he might have been around, it wasn't just that. Like, this is who he is. He talked about preparation a lot. And I think he's going to be a great cornerstone piece. Like you said there, not the biggest guy, not even the strongest arm, but the confidence and how he approaches the game, I think that should give any coach a lot to look forward to when drafting him. Joe, we really appreciate you getting this kicked off here. It was a pick that we knew was probably going to be the case, but we really appreciate the insight on the team, what they might be thinking, how they're moving forward, and even some other picks in the draft, because that's where we're looking to. So really appreciate you taking the time to join us, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, coming up next, Washington Redskins at number 2 overall. We're going to have Mark Bullock on from The Athletic. That's coming up next episode, so keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.